marriage matters to God, and marriage matters to her. Marriage matters to him. Marriage matters. For more than a decade, it has been common for us to be bombarded with statistics about the divorce rate, and that the divorce rate is so high. So the last few weeks, I've tried to debunk a few of those ideas with some more current research, some more current statistics. And so today, as we get started, I want to share a few with you again. But I want to set it up this way. One of the things that we've been told is that the divorce rate is the same in the church as it is outside of the church. And so if it is so high, it can get personal really quickly. We can come to church and we can look around and think, wow, if the divorce rate is here, then, and I'm looking around at friends and family and people that I know and care about, and I see this transpiring, where's the hope for me and my marriage? And so, I mean, it's nowhere near what it's been said. And so I came across a little bit more encouraging information from this book, The Good News About Marriage, and wanted to share that with you. The rate of divorce for those who attend church weekly is 25 to 50% lower than among those who don't attend worship services. Now, I know I'm a pastor and I'm standing on stage on a Sunday morning telling you, come to church. But the statistics don't lie. If you are here today and if you are in a church regularly, you are lowering your chances of divorce by 25 to 50% as compared to those who don't. The other thing that she says in the book, couples who prioritize their faith and pray together are dramatically happier, more connected, and closer in their marriage. So I think that speaks for itself. If you want to have a closer marriage, more connected marriage, dramatically happier marriage, then you need to be active in your faith. You need to pray together as a couple. 2 weeks ago, we talked about the expectations that we bring into marriage, that he'll bring some expectations in and she'll bring some expectations, and we're always different. And Willard Harley wrote this book that I've used as kind of an outline for the last couple weeks here, the book His Needs, Her Needs. And he's written about the top five needs for a woman in marriage and the top five needs for a man in marriage. Last week, we talked about a woman's top five needs. And it was wise for me to bring my wife up on stage and share her perspective as a woman, as my woman, as my wife, on how we're doing in meeting those needs and how her needs feel met in marriage that way and what that means. I'll say this quickly, but it is a desire of mine for me, for our church, to be appropriately transparent and vulnerable. So as a leader, I hope to lead the way. I hope that our church, that we can be appropriately transparent and vulnerable with those that we care about and those that we love and those that are who are our neighbors and those that we work with. Because that's refreshing. It's real. And none of us are perfect. So the sooner that we try to not pretend that we're perfect and we can be appropriately real, I think the better off all of us will be. And the more that people will come to Jesus because of that. I truly believe that. Today, I want to wrap up and talk about the top five needs that a man has. When you think about it, you're going to understand very quickly that men and women are similar yet different. That's how we would describe what we've been talking about the past few weeks. You probably realize there are many inanimate, tangible objects in the world that we tend to assign a gender to. And we don't always think about why. For instance, you know, we refer to the church as being a she, don't we? She is the bride of Christ. We refer to a ship as being a she. Hurricanes, I was doing some thinking on this. Hurricanes are this is Hurricane Bob from 1991, can be a he or a she, can't they? I mean, that's just how the news describes them. Well, today, as we wrap up this series, I want to explain the why behind some things being considered male or female. Some of them are going to be quite obvious, so just track with me here. The first one I want to show you is a remote control. What do you think? Is this male or female? Remote control. See, some of you would think male, but that's not accurate. Actually, a remote control is female because it brings a man joy. He'd be lost without it, and it boosts his confidence when he's holding on to it. The next one here, Ziploc bags or freezer bags, male or female? What do you think? Male? Okay, yeah, you're right. They're male because they hold everything inside and yet you can see right through them. So this next one here, sponges, male or female? So you're kind of catching on to my pattern, aren't you? Yeah, sponges are in fact female. They're they're soft and squeezable, and yet they retain water. This next one here, this is a car tire. Male or female? Male. A car tire is male. They easily and often quickly go bald, and they're often overinflated. So, I've got two more for you, and then we'll be done. This is a photocopier, a copier machine. What do you think? Male or female? Those of you who said female, you are correct. Because once they're turned off, it takes a while for them to warm back up again. And they're not done. They are effective at reproduction if you push the right buttons. But they can wreak havoc if you push the wrong buttons. This last one. One more. A hammer. A hammer is in fact, male. It hasn't changed a whole lot in 5,000 years. It's not real exciting, but occasionally it's handy to have around. So, all right. But do you understand the why behind the reasoning, why we assign genders to certain things, inanimate objects? I'm going to be in trouble for that one later, I can tell. But men and women, male and female, similar yet different. Now, I want to clarify, I am not an expert in marriage. I have made many mistakes, countless mistakes. In fact, you might view me as simply a fellow pilgrim on this journey of trying to do better. So I've made a lot of mistakes, but I can also confidently say I am fighting for my marriage with Dana in a good way. And so I want to invite you to maybe some insights, some things that I've discovered and that we've discovered, and hopefully it can help take your marriage to another level. So we're going to get into the top five needs, but without further ado, I'd like to invite my wife. No, I'm just kidding. I was going to invite Dana up here today, but she said no. Top five needs that a man has. Number five, starting five and moving up to number one, admiration. Number five need of a man, admiration. Ladies, you need to understand, husbands want to be admired. They want to be respected. They want their opinion to matter for something. They want their wife to look up to them as the provider and protector, to be respected by their wife. And I know you might think, well, gee, it sounds like somebody has a little bit of a shaky self-image. Well, maybe so. But God knows how He wired men, and so He has appropriately given instruction and teaching and even some commandments, expectations of wives that will align and fulfill the innate, the internal needs that men have. 2 weeks ago, we talked about mutual submission. Now, how we should each desire to meet the needs of the other, to put the other one first, to put their needs above our own, to submit one to another. Ephesians 5, verse 21. Paul writes this, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Not because you want to, not because, you know, they deserve it, but out of reverence, out of a healthy respect, a healthy fear for Christ, for God. That's why we do it. The very next few verses speak directly to women, verse 22 and 23. Wives, submit to your own husbands. Submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife as Christ is the head of the church, his body of which he is the Savior. So, in week one, we talked about this idea of mutual submission. We talked a little bit again last week about mutual submission and this idea that submission is, it's not a sign of inferiority, but it is a sign of servanthood, of servant leadership, in fact. Submission mirrors the protection, the provision that you desire. It also reveals that God knows what the male ego needs. Paul goes on to say this to husbands, verse 25. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Now, later on in this very same passage, down in verse 32, Paul is going to talk about the relationship between a husband and a wife and the church. And he says, hey, I know that this seems like a profound mystery to you. In other words, that it's difficult to understand. And he reiterates again, the wife must respect her husband. The husband must love his wife. And when both of you are doing your part, you are spiritually united. I've never found a wife who had a hard time being submissive to her husband, to respecting her husband, when the husband loves her and serves her the way Jesus Christ loved the church. How did he love the church? He did so sacrificially, unselfishly, willing to die for her. That's what needs to happen within a marriage relationship. And ladies, wives, women, your husband needs to feel and sense that you are in his corner, that you admire him, that you respect him. It doesn't mean he's perfect. He's not. It doesn't mean he's always going to get it right. He's not. It doesn't mean he hasn't made mistakes. He has. What it means is that you've made a commitment to him. You see something in him that others don't as easily see from their vantage point. You believe in him. After I share a message on Sunday, it's pretty common. I'll be out in the hallway and someone will walk by. A few people will walk by. Hey, great job today, preacher. Nice message, pastor. Hey, good point there. Good teaching. I appreciate that. I do. I appreciate the encouragement. I do. But I hope that you can understand there is one voice that means more than all the others. And at some point later in the day, maybe over lunch, or at some point when my wife occasionally says those words, hey, I really enjoyed that today. Hey, that was a great point. That really connected. I think that's a profound truth. That means something to me. And so maybe later today, my final point, we'll get that type of affirmation. We'll see. Because you know where I'm going with the message today. But I hope that you ladies understand. Here's what it means to me. I want to mean something to the person who means the most to me. And so, ladies, I hope that you understand your affirmation, your admiration for him. It's a deep, profound need that he has. You speaking into his life, he has a need for that. There is some skill set that your man has that other people don't see the way that you do. And so you building him up in that, you recognizing that, admiring in that in him, he longs for that. He longs for you to build him up publicly, to build him up privately for something. And so this honor, this respect of the husband by the wife, it's so significant to the male ego that God's inspired word has actually included some teaching on it regarding that you can even perhaps help connect a man, a non-Christian husband, to Christ because of that. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. Wives, in the same way, submit yourselves to your own husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. Wives, your husband has a need, a deep need for honor, for respect. It endears you to him. In the 1920s, there was a successful heavyweight boxer by the name of Jack Dempsey. He was pretty well known at the time, very successful. And one day, a reporter interviewed his wife, and the reporter asked this question of her, "What's it like being married to a fighter?" And she said, "I didn't marry a fighter, I married a champion." Ladies, that's what your husband wants to feel. Every husband desires for his wife to see him as her champion, her knight, her warrior, her hero. And let me take this a step farther. Your husband will largely become what you say he is to him. If you build him up, if you encourage him, if you admire him, if you support him, he will live up to that expectation. And if you belittle him, and you berate him, and you nag him, and frustrate him, he will live down to that expectation. Wives, you meet a significant need deep within your husband when you respect and honor him. That's need number 5, admiration. Need number 4, shared household responsibilities. Now, I know that this kind of lacks the excitement and the passion and potential of need number 5, but a lasting, thriving, healthy marriage goes beyond all the honeymoon or the promotion or the new house. It's the nitty-gritty. It's the daily grind. It's the details of day in and day out. Willing to work together, to learn to problem solve, to figure out solutions when it comes to making a home and building a home. Now, when he wrote this book and when he did this research, Willard Harley, he wasn't talking about taking things back to a 1950s stereotype where a housewife did all of the household work and the man was out working all day long and he came home and all he did was complain about things and expected this far-fetched devotion of his wife. That's not what he's talking about. It's not like, well, he's the king of the castle. That's not what he's talking about. Marriage is a working together. It's a figuring it out. Some homes, you have one person working full-time and the other one maybe who stays at home. Other times, you have both people out working full-time. Sometimes you have someone working part-time and somebody else not, or both of you looking for a job. There are all kinds of different scenarios, and do not mishear me here. Those are each and every one okay if you can figure out these problems and work on them together and problem solve them together. It's always interesting to watch the first few months or even the first year of a new marriage. And each of the, you know, the man, the wife, the husband, the wife, they kind of come into the marriage and they each have their ideas of, well, I'm going to be really good at this and I'm going to help them get better at it. And the other one, I'm going to be really good at this and that's what I'm going to focus on. And you get several months into it and you've learned that your ideas, the roles, the responsibilities going into it are usually not the exact way that you expected it happening. Things can kind of change. Again, marriage is a working it out, figuring it out. Sometimes it's going to be a give and take. It's back and forth. It's different seasons and junctions in your marriage, but working together, learning that each of you can bring something to the table to lighten the load. There are couples where a man has, he's maybe taken early retirement or something has happened. And so maybe he's no longer working, and yet his wife continues to work full time. And so maybe he, from that point on, he begins making all of the meals in the house for them. If you were to roll things back maybe 20 or 30 years, it might have very well been quite opposite, depending on the season that people are in, that married couples are in. Maybe one of you keeps the checkbook because that's the most important thing that you could do, and your spouse isn't really great at that. Maybe your spouse is in charge of fixing things around the house, and you are in charge of breaking things around the house. It's a give and take. You figure those things out. Maybe one of you does the grocery shopping, and one of you handles getting the oil changed in the car and taking care of maintenance and that sort of thing. Maybe one of you takes the kids to school in the morning, and the other one picks the kids up after school in the afternoon. You figure these things out. It works well for you. There's no right or wrong to this as long as you can work to agree. I kind of like to match the socks once the laundry's done. My wife likes to let me match the socks once the laundry's done. It's just not something that she enjoys doing. In 18 years of marriage, I've never once cooked a family meal for our family in our home. In 18 years of marriage, my wife has never once done our taxes or fulfilled our budget, that sort of a thing. You wouldn't want me cooking. You wouldn't want her working on our taxes. It's just not our gifting. But we're both content to work these roles out and work on things that we're strong at. You find and you figure out these things out. Understand this. There is a give and take. Now, occasionally life is going to throw you a curveball. And some of you have lived through that. Some of you might be there right now. And so what do you do when life happens? Well, I would encourage you, remember your vows. Understand that you're really trying to serve one another and be Jesus to them. This is your wife. This is your husband. So figure these things out. Whatever the time, whatever the season, whatever the task may be, don't see it as some household chore. See it as making some sort of compassionate investment in the person that you care deeply about. There's a principle found all throughout the New Testament. And it finds itself very, very clearly in Romans chapter 12, verse 10. Paul writes this, honor one another above yourselves. Over and over again, you'll see this principle throughout Scripture. Honor one another above yourselves. So why not start with your spouse? In your marriage, today, honoring one another above yourselves. Need number four, shared household responsibilities. Need number three is an attractive spouse. A husband needs a spouse who is personally attractive to him. And I say that very clearly, who is personally attractive to him. Now, Dr. Willard Harley, he makes it clear that in a physical relationship, an intimate relationship, most men find it nearly impossible to appreciate a woman for her inner qualities alone. There must be more to it. In fact, Harley discovered that a man's need for physical attractiveness in a mate is quite profound. In other words, it's not that she just has great character. There's got to be some chemistry between the two. And I'm talking about this today because it's significant. And ladies, you need to understand the depth of this need. Now, I will tell you, ladies in the room, as I began working towards this message this week and considering a woman's top five needs, I mean, the thought entered my mind. I mean, when I look at a man's top needs and at a woman's top needs, our list, men's needs, are not near as noble as yours. I mean, last week we covered these, right? We touched a quick refresher. A woman's top needs are affection, conversation, honesty and openness. You want us to be honest and open with you. Okay, financial stability, family commitment. And then you can kind of look at a man's top needs, and it's like, well, we just want a wife who looks good in a bathing suit. I mean, so I get it. I get it. Our list is nowhere near as decent as yours. To add insult to injury, ladies, you don't even have this similar need in your top five list anywhere. You don't care what we look like. And I know you would probably respond to that, well, it's just not as high a priority as it is for men. But this idea of an attractive spouse for a man, it speaks something about the male ego. I mean, think about the whole appearance thing for a moment. When a girl gains 10 pounds, she notices it. It bothers her. It frustrates her. When a guy gains 10 pounds, it doesn't faze him. He could gain 10 pounds each of the next 7 years, and then one day he walks in and he says, hey, why don't my clothes fit anymore? That's the type of mindset that we often have. And yet, the male ego has a need for an attractive spouse. It's important to us. You see this all the time when you see a guy going out on a date for the first time. So a guy begins to date a woman, and they go out to the movies, and the next day at work, a coworker sees him, and he says, hey, I saw you out yesterday. Were you on a date? And, yeah, I was. And wow, she's beautiful. What does he say? Thank you. As if he had anything to do with it. Well, you know, I mean, we've been working on it, and it's been a project, but you caught her on a good day yesterday. Thank you. Has absolutely nothing to do with what he's done. But somehow he thinks that he, well thank you, I appreciate the feedback. He wants to take credit for her beauty. Guys, it is a compliment to us because somehow it enhances our self-image when we are seen with a beautiful woman. And so I don't know how else I can explain it, but men, I will say this. Because this is important to us, make sure that you tell your wife that you appreciate how she looks, that you appreciate her physical appearance. You know, the Song of Solomon is an interesting book. I mean, it is a story of intense romantic love that a husband has for his wife, that a wife has for her husband. And I'd like to read just a few lines this morning from Song of Solomon chapter 6. Some of you are maybe going to want to cover your ears because it's going to get a little intense. This again, remember, this is a man describing his wife to her. So Song of Solomon, chapter 6, verse 4. You are as lovely as Jerusalem. Your hair is like a flock of goats descending from Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of sheep coming up from the washing. Each has its own twin. Each has its twin. Not one of them is missing. Now, I'm from Kansas, from the Midwest. There are regions of the Midwest where this still holds some significance. You're talking about a full set of teeth here. Amazing. She's beautiful. Now, don't miss this. I understand that the metaphors have changed, but what hasn't changed in the last 3,000 years is a man's desire for an attractive spouse. But let me make sure you understand. Don't take this wrong. What Willard Harley is saying in the book and in this concept is the wife does not have to look like a supermodel. That's not the idea. I turn 40 this coming year. I do. My wife does not turn 40 this year. But we don't have to look like we're in our 20s. That would be foolish, okay? We shouldn't try to look like people that we are not. That would be foolish. That would be ridiculous. That would be immature. However, we ought to try to look the best that we can for the other person. We have to make an effort. And so the idea here is that she cares enough about her appearance that she works at it for him. Ladies, your husband should not be comparing you to other women. But this is about what you are capable of looking like if you care about yourself and if you care enough to try and turn your husband's head. So ladies, if the only time that you get all dressed up and you do your hair up nice and you put on something nice and you spend a few hours in front of the mirror to get ready is when you're getting ready to go out on a ladies' night out with your friends, then something's wrong. That's not what God has designed. The best marriages are when the inner beauty makes outer beauty come alive, and you've done so for Him. Here's the second need that a man has. Number two need, recreational companionship. Recreational companionship. He wants to spend time with you. A man wants to spend significant, special moments of life with someone. I mean, do you remember the creation account? Over and over again, as God is creating, each day concludes with this phrase, "It is good, it is good, it is good." And then in one moment, all of a sudden, it is not good. Genesis chapter 2, verse 18. The Lord God said, "It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him." I mean, it's quite obvious that the animals that God had created were not what Adam needed for a helpmate. We might say in our culture, well, a dog is man's best friend, but it's clearly not a helpmate. It's no suitable helper could be found. The Hebrew word in the NIV, it's talking about this match, a perfect match. It can also be translated as an opposite. So an opposite that meshes well, that meets the needs. Again, similar yet different. Someone who has a top five list that's very different than your top five list. And yet God brings them together. He wants them to be able to spend time together, to make certain that they have companionship together. And so ladies, when you go on that motorcycle ride with him, it makes his day. And I know sometimes he maybe asks you to do some crazy things and it's much easier to say no, but sometimes just say yes. When he's like, hey, and he looks a bit like a junior hire or something, is all excited about something. Hey, I went down to the street corner today and I bought some illegal fireworks, maybe while we were in Mexico. And I mean, they're illegal, but they're available. Do you want to come see how high they'll blow a 50-gallon drum into the air? What? Yeah, come on. Josh is going to be there and Mick's going to be there and we're going to light these fireworks underneath this metal 50-gallon drum and we're going to see how high it'll go up in the air. It'll go about 40 feet, by the way. Just come along. I said this was in Mexico, right? Okay, yeah. Come along. Maybe you come along and you film it and you say yes and you get excited with him. Spend time with him. If he's out in the garage working on a project, maybe you take a moment and you go out and talk with him about how's the project going, how's his day going. Maybe if he plays sports with some other men who are his age, and maybe even they're out of shape, you go to that game, and you cheer him on. And when the game is over, maybe you help him to the car. Open the car. Maybe you have to drive him home. But you spend time with him. Things change, obviously, the older you get, but find ways to spend time with your husband. Accept his invitations to spend time with him. My wife and I, we love spending time together and finding things that we enjoy doing together. And we find that something happens when we do that. There's an old Kenyan proverb that says this: if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, take someone with you. If you want to last, spend time with someone. If God has blessed you with marriage, then he's given you someone that you can spend time with. And I hope that you'll do so. It would be a horrible mistake to have a helpmate that God has given you, put in your life, and then to not spend time with them. All right, top need of a man. And you know what it is. No surprises here. But the number one need of a man is sexual fulfillment. Every study that's done, research shows this is always the greatest need that shows up, according to the husband. And every man, I'm sure, is glad that we're talking about this because their wives probably have said, or maybe even will say again, that's all you ever think about. That's all you ever talk about. You have a one-track mind. My lovely wife told me this last week. She said, you know when you were talking about those boxes of expectations and when a man looks into a woman's box with his lenses on, it's like, well, man, that's just weird. She said, I really think if a woman looked into a man's box of expectations of needs, there'd just be two things in there. It'd be food and sex. And you take care of those two things, and most of the time, he's going to be okay. She's probably not too far off there. But did you know that studies confirm this topic dominates the male thought process? God made men. He made us with this profound need. Listen to the words of affirmation that this wife gives to her husband. Again, Song of Solomon, chapter 5, verse 10. This is from The Message. My dear lover glows with health, red-blooded, radiant. He's one in a million. There's no one quite like him. I'm just going to leave that up there for a few minutes, okay? Because I know some of you ladies are writing that down. It's going to be your new life verse. Can I get that on shiplap above my bed in a mirror, that sort of thing? If you were to read the rest of that verse, just wait till you get home later. Ladies, you need to understand, these are the types of words that your husband would love to hear from you, from his wife. When it comes to the bedroom, in fact, there are three categories that are important to a husband. And so I would just break it down this way. With sex, your husband desires affirmation, creativity, and frequency. Affirmation. Just like everything else, he's a man. He wants to know that he's done a good job, that he's doing a good job. And so he wants to know, hey, does the yard look nice? Yeah, it looks great. Hey, does that home project that I've been working on, does that look good? Yeah, it looks great. Hey, how are things with the office changes that I've made? Oh, it looks great. And he wants to know if he's good in the bedroom. It's important to him. Creativity. That just means that you've put some time into this. This is not just some afterthought, but there's some intent, there's some excitement, there's some creativity, and you put some effort into this. And frequency. Every survey shows, without exception, that the man wants to engage in this marital activity more than the woman does. So, those are the things that are important to him. If that's the case, then is this marital act rarely on the menu, or is there regularity to this celebration? The New Testament talks about regular and mutual intimacy being the norm. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 3, Paul writes this, the husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. So again, Paul puts it out there, he puts it pretty clear, this ought to be the norm. Verse 5, do not deprive each other, except perhaps by mutual consent and for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer. Then come together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. So I hope you understand this. There is a scriptural instruction situation where a couple chooses to be intimate for a while, and then they choose to not be intimate for a while for the purpose of prayer, to draw close to God. And so there may be times when things happen. Maybe it's due to a pregnancy or the very end of a pregnancy or after the birth of a child, or maybe a spouse is grieving the loss of a loved one, or some other tragedy has taken place, or there's been hurt or pain that hasn't been dealt with yet. And Paul says, in those times, you pull away physically, but you do so for a short time, for the purpose of being closer to God, to devote yourself to prayer. But Paul says, don't do that for very long, because I've seen you. You're not very good with willpower. You're not very good with patience. So make this a short season. Those 1 Corinthians 7, verse 5 moments ought to be rare. They ought to be mutually agreed upon. And they should be something that was put there for you to lean into God during that time. That ought to be the motivation. Other than around the birth of all three of our children, in our marriage, my wife and I have made certain that physical intimacy has been a regular part of our relationship. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. That is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh. They become one flesh. It doesn't say that they became one flesh. It says they become one flesh. It's ongoing. It's not an instantaneous on the wedding night, you become one flesh. Marital oneness is a lifelong emotional, physical, spiritual quest. And God created you to have a passion for your spouse, for you to one another regularly enjoy things physically between the two of you. Now, I know that some of you, when I say that, might say, well, hey, you just don't understand my situation. You don't understand our circumstances. I don't know your situation. And I don't, perhaps, understand the circumstances. Maybe something difficult has happened. Maybe there's been abuse in the past or something painful that hasn't been dealt with. Maybe there's a health issue going on. Maybe tragedy has taken place. I don't know your situation. But I have known several people who look to make an excuse before they ever seek to make an effort. And I don't want you to fall into that camp or to stay there. I know that there are difficult, extenuating circumstances, but a lot of times extenuating circumstances are a result of the fact that selfishness has crept into your marriage. Or perhaps you've lost interest in your spouse, or you've stopped working intentionally on your relationship, or you've allowed fatigue or apathy to become all-consuming. If your health allows for intimacy, and it is not part of your relationship, you are inviting temptation into your marriage. Bob Russell, retired pastor, says this: if you're withholding intimacy from your spouse, then you are sending a starving person out into a world which is a food court with luscious aromas beckoning and many shops offering free samples. Wives, you need to affirm him. You need to encourage him. You might be shocked at the change in his behavior or the man he would become if you showed some attention to his needs. Now, ladies, last week, you remember, we talked to men about your need for conversation. Well, he needs sexual intimacy, and he needs it from you, and he needs it from no one else. And this is not the desire of some warped male. This is God's gift. You are God's gift to him. Virtually nothing else between the two of you will do more to encourage him than this. So here's the takeaway this week. With marriage, God is concerned with direction more than perfection. We're not talking about perfection here. Nobody's perfect. There is no perfect husband. There's no perfect wife. But what direction are you moving? What are some active things that you are doing, some steps you're taking, so that you and your spouse can improve the direction of your relationship? The best way for you to be distinctive, to leave your mark on Christianity, on this valley, on your family, or for generations to come, the best way that you can do that is by having a happy, healthy, intentional, joyful marriage. I've said this before, but the best thing you can do for your children is to give them a happy, healthy marriage between you and your spouse. Things have got to be different. We've got to be distinct from the culture around us. And so again, I'll wrap up this series, Marriage Matters, with this bold truth again. Wives, respect your husband. Husbands, love your wife. Let's pray.